And Wendy and Peter, thanks Gerhard. Wendy and Peter, when it comes to supplementary feed to your, or bought-in feed for your cattle, or dairy cows, what are the things you bring in and what sort of rate do you feed them? I mean, like the stock feed, not this, you know, the mineral type of supplements.
Yeah, we get bulk whole grain, obviously, so it's either barley or triticale or wheat, depending on what we can get, and depending on how much grass we've got as to how heavy we feed. So obviously when there's not much grass around, well, they can get up to 5 or 6 kilograms per cow, but when there's plenty of grass around, they'll be down to 1 kilogram in the springtime. So it varies whether we're joining or whether there's other feed around or what the general condition of the cow is like.
It's in tough times and you're giving out 5 or 6 kilos, that would, you know, when there's not much feed and it's a general drought, that'd be pretty hard to manage a farm profit-wise with that sort of input.
Yes, it does lead into profits a fair bit, but you got to look at it the other way. If you don't feed them well, you're going to get less income as well, so we try and keep them as happy and fully fed as we can within reason.
Yeah. And when it comes to getting back to, now getting on to the stock supplementation, you've got that wonderful little shed there which has got all those little bins there. How many different bins have you got? Meaning not like, I know you've doubled them up, but how many bins you've got and what are the products that you've got in those bins, and is there anything extra you would like to or consider giving them?
There's a fair few varieties there. Obviously, the main ones are dolomite and kelp and apple cider vinegar and salt. Salt's the main one that they really go for all year round. The kelp, they sort of in and out a bit.
Heat mixed with dolomite?
It's mixed with dolomite if they're eating it too quickly, depending on how quick they're eating it, dolomite we put in. The apple cider vinegar, we sometimes water it down a bit with water just to stretch it out a bit further. And then there are other rations we mix up with cod liver oil there all the time, which for some reason or other they go for it occasionally. And then there's zinc and salt at 10 to 1 ratio. And there is copper and salt at the same ratio, 10 to 1. And sulfur as well. And they don't seem to go for many of those ones, only if they really need them. So.
Yeah, the cod liver oil they'll go for usually in the middle of summer when there's no grass, no green grass, or the middle of winter when we have a week or so of cloudy days. Cod liver oil gives you A, D and E. So they're things that normally you get out of green grass or sunlight. And if either of those are missing, then they'll look to the cod liver oil. So for most of the year, they don't touch it, but it's always there whether they want it or not. They don't have to have it. It's only if they stick their nose in and feel that they need it that they take it. So on most of the other things,
Yes, keep talking, Wendy.
So I was just going to say most of the other things are not touched. Greatly, we have a bit of copper and zinc taken over the year. The kelp and dolomite mix, the cows are always, generally always at. There's a couple of months a year that they're not. And it all depends too on what paddocks they're in as to, what different things they take, because each of the paddocks, of course, has their own, unique take. If we've had the manure gator going on a couple of paddocks, then that tends to leave a high potassium, so the cows will always come for extra salt in after they've been to those paddocks. So it just all depends on what paddocks the cows are in as to what they want to have a look at in the food bar.
Right.
So,
and
just a question for you. So you mentioned that the high potassium levels where the manure gate has been operating. But
Yep.
Are there any observable differences also with the type of pasture that they've got? In other words, in pasture species and the mix that they're having access to? Does that vary much from paddock to paddock, and do you find that that might also contribute to their different mineral needs?
Yeah, definitely. We don't have as good a pasture mix as we'd like in all the paddocks yet. We're getting there, but yeah. So there is definitely a difference in the pasture species mix in some of the paddocks. And yeah, usually that's when they head for your kelp, because it has a lot of different minerals. Kelp has most different minerals in it bar copper as the general rule. Hence, that's why we have the copper separate. But, yeah, so the kelp sort of covers most of those incidental little bits and pieces, but our main aim is to get as many herbs and grasses in every paddock as we can.
Well, that's an interesting statement you made. So how do you sort of encourage the herbs and the extra herbs in the paddocks?
Sorry, what was that?
So you made a statement dealing about herbs and grasses, getting a diversity there. How do you encourage the herbs to grow in the paddocks?
Oh, well, oversow or plant a summer crop and just carry them on through into permanent pasture. So our main crop situation would be lucerne and plantain and chicory and rape
and
clover and millet. And then when the millet and the grapes die out after a couple of grazings, well, then next we'll oversow with ryegrass. So we've lucerne and the clovers and the chicory and plantain will keep growing through, and the ryegrass will come up through that. And then you've got the natural stuff that comes up anyway, like the dandelions and the marshmallows and the tapeweed, which you probably don't want to come up, but it does.
Oh, well, probably not in as big a quantity as sometimes it does after a dry year, but generally the cows milk well off it, so as long as you manage it well, it's not usually a big problem.
What about the level of maturity of the various plants too? Because, I mean, obviously they're going to have different minerals available at different times. Do you feel that there's any impact there as well, or do you sort of not really get too concerned about that?
Sorry, on what was that, Gerhard? Just the first bit, I mean.
In respect of the different plants maturing at different times and therefore making available different minerals, do you sort of look at that and say, oh, yeah, some of them are starting to flower, so we know we're going to have more mineral concentration in there, or does that figure in?
No, generally that's nature's way, isn't it?
Sorry, say again?
Generally that's nature's way, and things come up when they're meant to, which is what the cows need generally. So if we actually focused on eating things in season, we'd probably find we'd all be a lot better off minerally.
Yeah. But sometimes we're putting animals into a paddock that isn't mature and they've got a lot of foliage there, but maybe not enough mineral content because the plant hasn't matured to that level yet where it's going to draw on the minerals to create a flowering head or a seed. And so, you know, we're going to have a different nutritional plane available to the stock depending on the maturity of the plant, let alone the species of the plants that they've got access to. So I just wondered whether that's something you looked at in the way that you managed your grazing, or you just looked across and said, right, enough feed in there, claim in that paddock.
Yeah, most of them seem to mature much the same, as in if they don't want to eat it that time, they'll eat it the next time round, so it doesn't really matter. But
we'll
the chicory mature, as in go to seed, so it reseeds itself every year. So there are certain times when they probably won't be eating the chicory, but we'll either top it in the autumn time or else they'll eat it when they feel like it. So it's not really an issue on our place. There's plenty of variety.
Uh-huh. Yep. And naturally, the more diversity you've got there, the more they're going to be able to pick and choose what they want.
That's right.
And leave the other stuff behind. Yeah. A bit like us with our fruit bowl, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So it's just learning not to be a fussy farmer and have it all neat and tidy all the time. So it's just learning that the cows can leave something until next time and it's still going to be just as valuable for them.
Yeah. You don't have to run around with a topper or anything like that. Let let nature do the course. Why burn up any more fossil fuel if you don't need to?
No, we do a little bit in autumn just to tidy up and thistles. So that's one of our ways of dealing with thistles, is waiting till they've got a flower head but not a seed head and topping.
Yep.
So it just lets the thistles...
A little bit's okay, but you know, so many people want to see it looking like the local parklands that have been mowed every week.
That's how they've been brought up.
Yeah,
exactly.
All that mindset change thing.
Yeah.
Well, that leads me on to a question.
I was going to ask about grazing rotations too.
Yeah. Can you ask the question again, Gerhard?
Yeah, I was going to ask about grazing rotations. Is Graham Hand's work, you've been exposed to Graham Hand's work and under the auspices of Alan Favory's Holistic Grazing Management, haven't you?
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah, not in depth, but it sounds good in theory, and if I was running a beef crop, I'd look into it a bit more, but for dairy, you don't get your return.
Well, the cows milk off the shorter grass better than they do off the long mature grass, because the energy's
higher
in the shorter stuff, so for a dairy farm, we'd found better off being shorter.
And that's their comment, but if you're production focused, and then you take that thinking forward. But I put to you that the thinking with the holistic grazing management is just that. It's holistic in the sense of saying, all right, where are we at with our plants and where are we at with our soil? And too often these days we're actually pushing the production that far that we're now looking at and going, well, we've got thistles in the paddock, we've got capeweed in the paddock, we've got in some cases ragwort in the paddock. You know, we've got a range of other weeds that are really more than they should be. We always like to see a few in there. And so that's an indicator that the soil has actually had a shift in its biology and also its compaction and its nutrient status to the point where it's now supporting weeds rather than the better grasses that we would like to see more of in there.
Don't also forget to put water stress in there. So it's not nutritional. Pardon?
Water as in rain or drinking?
Water as in rain.
Yep. And part of the strategy with the holistic grazing is to actually make sure you've got good ground cover. And when you do have dews, and you don't actually get rain, but you have dews, that you've got a big surface area of plant that can absorb that dew and take it into the soil as well. So it's about holding it there. It's about looking after that soil. You know, for the last 30 or 40 years, we've really neglected a lot of that thinking and just said, oh, well, we want more grass to grow. We want to grow shorter because we want to get the cows to milk better off it. But then later on, we're chasing, we're doing renovations and trying to get the grass to grow that we want to grow again. So there's a whole range of other costs that then start to come in that aren't connected with that longer term, you know, management pattern that we've developed.
Yeah, that's true, and we naturally have longer rotations in the winter time and the summer time for that reason, and have more ground cover in the summer time. And in the winter time we try and build up a feed, which like most farmers do anyway. So I guess we're sort of doing that anyway. It's only in the autumn and the spring when we really want the shorter stuff.
Yep. Fair comment, yeah. So obviously you're taking that into consideration, and I'd be fairly keen to hear what Ron and Bev Smith's viewers on that, because I know that they did the course with Graham. In fact, they hosted it down there, and I attended with them and a few other people for the 2 days, and they were quite clear that they wanted to take that thinking onto their property, and they felt that it was going to be the single biggest factor that would make a difference on the way that they've run their farm for as many years as they have.
Yeah, well, we've just been talking to the new share farmer, Don Smith, and they seem to be having a bit of a different view to what they were originally going to have. So it'll be interesting to see how it comes out.
Right, yes. Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, bottom line is, doesn't matter what you're doing, you still have to make a profit at the end of the day.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
So,
yeah, that's
always in practice.
Mm-hmm. Compromise, life's full of compromises.
Take the best of every bit of advice you've got, put it all together and make it work for you.
Yeah, that's it.
Wendy and Peter and Gerhard, the question I'd like to ask is that on organic and in conventional farming, quite often when the animals are fed a lot of grain or whatever they're fed, you've got these toxic urine spots which make the paddock quite uneven when you get to regrowth. And do you, on when it comes to organic farming, do you get those sort of rank spots or spots where the cattle won't go back to for a season or so?
It's never a season or so. They won't visit those spots the next round. But that's the same with where we've had the chook caravans too. They won't visit those spots the next round, but the next round after that they will. So it's just, well, nobody likes to eat where they toilet, do they?
No.
No, so I figure, you know, they're pretty smart and leaving them for a round and then going back.
Yep. You know, on the conventional farm, the toxic spots are very pronounced, mainly because the cows are so full of toxins. We know they're full of toxins because they only last about 3 lactations and they're finished. So I just wondered whether that sort of shows up in on your farm, those rank spots, as you would find in conventional farms, which have been really pushed with, where the cow's been really pushed with a lot of grain.
Yeah, you've got to be a little bit careful in that not all conventional farmers farm like that. A lot of them are doing things very well as well. But on your high input farms where there is a lot of push, you do have some ammonia problems where the cows are over grain fed. But a lot of conventional guys around us are feeding very moderate rates and are fertilising more organically each year, which is fantastic. And, yeah, a lot of those guys are doing a great job. They'll never be certified organic or be organic per se, but for every little bit that they do better, that's fantastic for everybody out there eating product.
Yeah, great stuff. I've got a few questions from Alan. Sorry, Gerhard, what did you want to say?
I agree with Wendy, because at the end of the day, that's what farming is about. It's providing a quality food for people so that they can actually derive a health benefit from it. That's what food's about, not just to fill a hole there that you don't feel hungry again later on.
Yep.
I've got a few questions what Alan Wood has brought to our attention, so I just want to ask you these to you people. Wendy, it's for you and Peter is, when mixing kelp with dolomites, what is the ratio that you would mix or what you know what works? What's a bit of help there that you can offer?
Nana's recipe.
And how rich you're feeling and how much you want to feed them. What does the
eat, I suppose? The ratio is flexible, really.
Yeah, very.
if you just let them have straight kelp, they'd get... be too expensive to keep up with them, so...
Summer time.
So if they're going too hard on it, we'll just mix a few handfuls a few handfuls of dolomite in with it and just see how they go. If they turn up their noses and they don't eat any, we've obviously gone too heavy with the dolomite, so we ease the sack a bit, and so it's just a bit of trial and error. So it's not a set ratio.
I think that's very good. I like that answer.